or you are not. So first we're going to have a short video clip from an opponent of GMOs.
Genetically modified organisms, GMOs, pose unparalleled threats. Nothing like them has ever existed in the entire course of life on this planet.
If you search the internet for terms like genetically modified, you'll find these kinds of pictures and articles that are very contrary to the concept. My favorite one is how your children will become zombies if they eat Monsanto's GMO corn. Okay, there's even a movie that uses genetic modification of catfish as part of its main plot. However, instead of us eating the fish eats us. Okay, now, first we're going to have a little quiz. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold up a product, and you are going to guess whether or not it contains GMOs. Okay, now, we don't know for certain because none of these products are labeled, but they're definitely trends in agriculture that would tell you that they're very likely either one or the other. Okay, so what I need you to do is, if you think it's genetically modified, say yes. If you think it's not, say no. Okay, we're all going to try to do this sequentially. So here's our first one, and this is Vienna sausages. Okay, this is a yes. Okay, here's some margarine.
Yes.
So we're guessing it right, or are you just putting it in there?
We're just guessing. Okay, here's some stuffing.
Major yes.
Yes. Okay, let's try. Chocitos. Okay, that's a yes. Let's try this one. Coffee?
Yes.
No. Marshmallow bits? Yes, of course.
Do you want them back in the bag?
Peanut butter.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Rolled oats.
Oh, say it's not.
No.
No.
Better not.
Say yes.
No.
That's healthy.
No. Okay. Vinegar.
Yeah. The yeast.
No. Okay, what else do we have? Oh, here's some sugar. Cane sugar.
No.
Okay. That's good for a start. Okay, so actually, you guys did a little bit better than I thought you would. But obviously there was some confusion and stuff. That ends the participatory part of class. I have a 50-minute presentation, and I have 55 minutes. So I'm going to ask you to hold questions unless you need like clarification of something I said. So if you have any questions, we'll try to put them at the end. And the last part of the presentation I think is much more interesting than the first, so we want to get there. Okay. So the reasons why I can say that we can almost be certain whether food does or does not contain GMO is because of trends in U.S. agriculture. First, we're going to look at corn production. And here's a plot including the global acreage devoted to GM corn. And here's what it looks like in the U.S. Percentage is very high. And here we have for Argentina and South Africa. So, and here's the second graph, which shows the global acreage. Okay, and so what you can see from this is that for corn, about 90% of the corn comes from the U.S., and about 90% of it is genetically modified. Okay, so anything down in that pile that contained corn, you know, which includes a lot of different things, is genetically modified.
Rich, excuse me, but isn't it also true that when you have a field that's not genetically modified and it's surrounded by fields that are...
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. There is a lot of mythology out there. Okay, so we're going to go to the next ones. This is for GM soybeans, and again, the major producers of the U.S. along with Argentina and Brazil. And here's a plot of how much hectares are planted, and the U.S. produces about half the world's soybeans, and 90% of it is genetically modified. Okay, here's a graph for GM cotton. And again, it's the U.S. along with China and India. And this is the acreage again. And the U.S. produces about a third of the cotton, and 90% of it is genetically modified. Okay, this is a graph for GM canola. And canola, the big producer, is Canada. And Canada produces over 90% of the world's canola, and 90% of it is genetically modified. The other major crop that I couldn't get statistics on is sugar beets. And about 90% of the production in the U.S. is genetically modified, and since half the sugar comes from sugar beets and the other half from cane sugar, then about half of it is genetically modified. So, to sum up, in the United States, virtually any product containing corn, soybean, cottonseed, or canola oil, which is virtually everything, contains genetically modified ingredients. So it's estimated that about 70% of all of our food contains at least one genetically modified ingredient. Now, you know, we had an election in November about labeling of GMOs. Does anybody know the top opponents of the GMO labeling law?
Monsanto.
Who else? The other major GMO producer? DuPont.
Yeah.
And the third one is, let me give you a hint.
Pepsi.
Your Pepsi contains corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, which is a GMO product. So that's why Pepsi was definitely against that proposition. Okay, so now we're going to go over a very brief description of how genetically modified plants are made. First, the scientist starts with a plant, which is disrupted to produce individual plant cells, which can be grown in tissue culture. The scientist then creates a plasmid, which is a circular piece of DNA, and it contains the transgene, the gene of interest, plus a gene to confer antibiotic resistance. So the plasmid is introduced into the plant cell, and an antibiotic is added to the medium in order to do selection. Then the tissue culture medium is changed to encourage the plant cells to differentiate into whole plants. And unlike animal cells, plant cells are totipotent. In other words, each individual cell of a plant can produce an entire plant. It's not like animals where you have to have an egg in order to get an entire organism. So, and then after they produce this transgenic plant, they back cross it with the original plant, which makes it more similar, because, you know, when you do things in tissue culture, things tend to get a little haywire sometimes. So they back cross it. So essentially it turns into the original plant with just the transgene that's been introduced into it. Okay, so to create a transgenic animal, scientists will incorporate the transgene into a fertilized cell and then breed those. Okay, so why do scientists want to incorporate foreign genes into crop plants? Okay, one reason are these guys. Pests do a tremendous amount of damage and can reduce crop yields significantly. So for years, farmers sprayed insecticides on crops to prevent plants from eating them. So now we can incorporate the pesticides into the plant directly. One of the most popular insecticides comes from a soil bacterium, Bacillus thuringiensis, BT for short, which produces a toxin when it sporulates. When nutritional conditions become poor, the bacterium closes its DNA into a spore. And then it also produces at the same time a toxin. And this is a close-up micrograph of the toxin crystals. So scientists discovered in the early 20th century that this toxin kills caterpillars, and farmers have been using it as an insecticide for nearly 100 years. This is how the toxin works. The toxin is either sprayed on the plants or incorporated into the leaves of GM crops, and then it's ingested by the caterpillar. And the toxin goes down the caterpillar's digestive tract where it gets solubilized, then activated, and then the toxin binds to the caterpillar's midgut cells where it forms an oligomer. And it turns out that the toxin binds to a specific protein found only in the midgut of Lepidoptera, that's butterflies and moths. And once it binds to the membrane, it activates the gut cell's death pathway, which creates pores in the cells, leading to osmotic lysis. And when the integrity of the gut is disrupted, the caterpillar dies of septicemia. So that's how it works. It's somewhat complicated, but it works, and people have put it into crops now. So the second reason why GMOs have been invented have been for these guys, the weeds. You know, whenever you grow weeds, bad things happen to your crops. Now, so what farmers have been doing is that they've been using herbicides. And herbicides are at least somewhat toxic to animals. And they also cause issues with extra costs and stuff because, you know, you either had to put the herbicides onto your crop and let it decay before you planted, or you had to take your soil and plow all the weeds under before planting. So either of these conditions cost extra money. And so, you know, by incorporating the herbicide's resistance into the gene, into the crop, then you can just apply the herbicides directly while the crops are growing and get rid of all the weeds. No problems with weeds anymore. So those are two main reasons. And one of the most popular herbicides is Roundup. And Roundup acts by interfering with the plant's shikimate pathway. And this pathway, which is partially shown here, produces the aromatic amino acids phenylalanine, tryptophan, and tyrosine. Roundup, or glyphosate, acts by inhibiting an upstream reaction in the pathway, blocking the production of all three aromatic amino acids. Since no animals actually possess this pathway, but instead get all their aromatic amino acids from their food, then the herbicide is virtually non-toxic to animals. Okay, so that's a great advantage of using this herbicide versus a lot of the other ones.
I missed your point on what it does by using genetically modified, how it affects controlling weeds, or how they use it.
So they incorporate a gene which makes the organism resistant.
It's to the insecticide.
Right, to the herbicide, yeah. Yes. Okay, so now we're going to look at some transgenic or genetically modified plants. Okay, this is a table of most of the current genetically modified plants to date. Other than the five main crops that I mentioned previously, most of these are not necessarily grown extensively yet. There are some unusual plants in this group. You'll notice one of them is creeping bent grass. Now, why would people want to have grass be resistant to herbicides? Well, it turns out that this one is a favorite of golf courses. So you take your creeping bent grass, you put it genetically modified on your fairways, and you spray it with Roundup, and all the weeds are instantly gone. Makes it super easy to maintain. Okay, other things that they've done, There's a lot of crops that have been developed to have resistance to various viral diseases, and scientists have engineered oils from plants to be healthier, to contain, you know, different kinds of bonds to make them healthier to eat and better tasting than non-GM crops. So those are the main things. Here are some peripheral things. Scientists have also altered pigmentation pathways to create the blue rose and the moonshade carnation. Plants not found in nature, but they look beautiful. Now, we can also get some rather weird things happening. And artist Eduardo Cac wanted to create a flower that was a combination of a plant and an animal. So he employed Dr. Neil Olszewski from the University of Minnesota to help him to introduce a transgene from Cac's blood into the petunia to give it red veins. However, the idea didn't work. And, you know, why he thought it would work is beyond me. But so what he did is he picked a petunia that already had red veins. Well, these colors do not look the same. Okay, so you guys are very sad. I would go over this side. So believe it or not, this is a red flower, and it has red veins. But the gene that he incorporated had nothing to do with the appearance of the petunia. So the petunia looked exactly the same, but it had some random gene from his cells that was incorporated into it. So he created this plantimal, you know, combination plant and animal. But, you know, things could get more sick than that, of course. So now we're going to look at transgenic animals, genetically engineered animals. Now, as previously mentioned, there actually is a 1989 beginning genetically modified salmon that was an inspiration for that movie, the Frankenfish movie. Okay. So, and the company Aqua Bounty took an Atlantic salmon, which are already extensively grown in farms, and they added a growth hormone regulating gene from a Pacific Chinook salmon and a promoter gene from an ocean pout. The promoter helps the gene go better. And so they added those into the fish. And what this does is this allows the salmon, the modified salmon, to grow full time. So normally an Atlantic salmon will only grow during the warmer months, and it won't grow in the cold months. But, you know, by doing this to the fish, it actually allows it to grow all year long. And this is actually a graph that shows, this is the growth rate of the Aqua Advantage salmon, and this is the growth rate of the wild Atlantic salmon. So it grows much faster, although it doesn't turn into a Frankenfish. You know, the ultimate size is exactly the same. Yes. So, you know, they don't look the same because I didn't take the graph out any further.
I see.
But they would.
How did they introduce the transgenic genes into the embryo?
Yes. They introduced that into the egg, yes. Okay. So there were a lot of questions about this fish, which is why it got the name Frankenfish, because, you know, it was different. It could get out and it could do all kinds of bad things. So, but in theory, you know, since they grow faster, you know, the most susceptible part of a fish's life is when it's little. So since these grow faster, in theory, they could outcompete a regular wild salmon in the wild. So, so what Aqua Bounty does is they provide the females as sterile females. So they can't breed, even if they were to get out. But they're gonna be cultured in farms and stuff, and they're not gonna be running around in the wild anyway. But of course, having a genetically modified animal is a great sin in certain people's eyes. So so when the company applied for the FDA to approve it in 2010, there was a lot of dissent. Mostly from the from the environmentalist and the also the Alaska fishing lobby, which kept it from being approved. However, finally, the environmental impact report for the Aqua Advantage salmon was released immediately before Christmas 2012, after the November election, although the report itself was dated from May 2012. Wonder why that happened. No, we don't know. So it is likely that this Aqua Advantage salmon might be the first transgenic animal to be approved for human consumption. So here's a look at two comparably aged fish, the wild type on the bottom and the bigger one, for about an 18-month-old. Okay, EnviroPig. EnviroPig is a genetically modified pig that produces the enzyme phytase, which allows the pig to digest phytic acid, which contains a form of phosphorus that is normally indigestible in pigs. So this results in reduced phosphorus being excreted into the environment, reducing pollution of our waterways. Another novel idea in genetic engineering was the cloning of pigs that are rich in omega-3 fatty acids. With this GM pig, you could eat bacon instead of smelly fish. What do you think about that, Ted? You could tell your wife, but bacon is good for you now.
Yeah, but how many of those are out there?
There aren't any of them out there. Okay. Okay, so genetic engineering has also been used to produce cows that produce milk that is free of beta-lactoglobulin, which many people are allergic to, and it's high in casein protein. And other cows have been genetically modified to produce the milk that is nearly identical to human milk, which would allow mothers who nurse to use milk that is more natural than the standard baby formula. However, due to intensive lobbying efforts, none of these genetically modified animals have been approved for human consumption and won't likely be in the near future either.
Was Nestle the biggest culprit? Mm-hmm. Nestle produces the world's formula.
Oh, no, that's probably irrelevant to it. But, you know, the biggest culprits are the natural food industry. You know, they want to keep all this out of there. So the other interesting animals that have been created, there are certain fluorescent proteins which are used in molecular biology labs like the one I work in. And these genes, we attach them to a gene that we're looking at, and when the gene gets transcribed and the fluorescent protein gets transcribed, and we can show it in our lab instruments. And the proteins come from a jellyfish which glows naturally. But some entrepreneurs decided, hey, we can put this into a tropical fish and we can produce glowfish. Aren't these beautiful? Okay. Besides the tetras, we also have transgenic zebrafish, which contain different colors of fluorescent proteins, and they glow really nicely. So these are some other ways of making genetically modified organisms. And as long as you don't eat them, you're safe.
Are they approved?
Are they what?
Approved.
No, they don't have to be approved if you don't eat them. You can make whatever you want as long as you don't have to eat it. But, you know. Okay, so now we're going to look at some studies that looked at GMO food safety. Here's a short video clip from a GMO opponent.
Every single independent study conducted on the impact of genetically modified GMOs on food shows that it damages organs, it causes infertility, it causes immune system failure, it causes holes in the GI tract, it causes multiple organ system failure when it's eaten, it causes a variety of changes, some of which we can't even guess at.
No,
new
growing
proteins are coded for by the altered DNA that we've never seen before. We are playing with genetic fire.
Genetic fire. Okay, so the question is, if genetically modified food is really bad for you, wouldn't you expect to see that in life expectancy, especially here in the United States where virtually all the food is genetically modified? So, but if you... Okay, we're going to get to that in mere seconds. So this graph shows the life expectancy of individuals of different races, different sexes, over the period of time. And 1996 is the date in which genetically modified crops started to be produced. So as you can see, the lifespan of individuals have gone up since the introduction of GMO crops. And in addition, the cancer rate has actually declined by about 20% since that time. So what is the probability that GMOs are actually causing harm? Probably pretty low. Okay, so for a number of genetically modified crops, the genes or gene products actually never enter the food supply since those parts of the plants are removed during processing. For example, sugar from GM sugar beets is chemically identical to sugar from non-GM sugar beets. Likewise, oils purified from GM canola, soybean, cottonseed, and corn oils are identical to non-GM oils. Much of the corn crop is dedicated to generating ethanol, which of course is identical to non-GM ethanol. Genetically modified cotton is worn rather than ingested, and there have been no reports of adverse effects of wearing GM shirts, for instance.
How can they be bioidentical if you have that extra protein in there, that's the genetically modified protein? Therefore, how can the non-version be the same as the version with the modified?
Because sugar does not have that gene. Sugar is produced independently. Most of the gene products have nothing to do with the gene. You know, the gene is found in the plant leaves. If you eat the leaves, you're probably going to get it. But otherwise, you're not. Okay, so, but even if you eat the parts of the crops that actually contain the genetically modified gene, what happens is that gene goes into your intestines and it gets digested. So the genes, the gene products, they all get broken down into components. And so even in theory, it's unlikely that eating GM crops can cause human beings harm. Here's another video clip.
There was an eight-year process where all the countries in the world came together and talked about whether there should be safety assessments for genetically engineered crops, genetically engineered animals, and genetically engineered microorganisms. We went to all these meetings over 8 years. There's now global agreement that there should be required safety testing for these crops before they come on the market. And you know what? The U.S. does not require that.
Is that true?
It's
not. Actually, in the United States, all applications for approval of genetically modified organisms released for public consumption are handled by the FDA. Development and testing of new GM crops usually requires 8 to 12 years, including 4 years of safety and environmental testing. The so-called Frankenfish has actually been in the loop for over 20 years. So, but there are some concerns because not every particular food is safe for all human beings to eat, because about 6% of the population contains an allergy to one or more food groups. So FDA testing requires that food allergies to GM crops be identical to testing for non-GM foods. So any products that contain a GM gene that's not found in non-GM food has to have its chemical structure analyzed to determine if it matches any known allergen, which contains a sequence of at least 35% identical for an 80 amino acid segment of any known allergen. In nearly all instances, commonly inserted genes would never be expected to produce similar genes produce similar to food allergens. However, if a match is found, then the protein would have to be tested with sera from allergy sufferers to determine the if there was an allergic reaction to that gene. any gene that has substantial equivalence to non-GM variety is declared to be safe. And so far there have been no published evidence of allergic reactions to any GM protein or any adverse health reactions associated with the consumption of GM crops since their introduction in 1996. This is a polyacrylamide gel electrophoresis comparison of GMO versus non-GMO proteins. The left two lanes show the protein profile of whole soybean extracts from non-GMO on the left and GMO on the right. And as you can see by the two bands, the bands are identical in each set of lanes, showing that there are equal amounts of each protein. In the second set of gels, the proteins were blotted on the gel, and then sera from allergy sufferers to soy were added on and detected. And so on the left, we see the proteins that people are allergic to in non-GMO, and on the right are the same proteins that are found in the GMO crops. So these show that they're identical. The last two lanes show that there is no reaction from normal individuals to either one of these soy proteins. Okay, so actually the safety of genetically modified foods have been tested in numerous animal studies, including mice, rats, pigs, chickens, and monkeys. Nearly all studies have shown no differences between the health of animals fed GM versus non-GM diets. Some negative studies have come from one laboratory headed by Dr. Seralini of the University of Caen, France. However, the conclusions of those studies have been refuted by numerous scientists who have noted flaws in study design and statistical evaluations. In addition, Dr. Seralini is funded by the Committee for Research and Independent Information on Genetic Engineering in Paris, France, which opposes genetic engineering of crops. So there's a little conflict of interest there. There are a few environmental concerns about GM crops, and I'm going to list those. First is the development of resistance to the BT crop target organisms. In other words, maybe one of the bugs that eats the crop will develop resistance to the toxin and spread like wildfire. So this was actually anticipated prior to the commercialization of these crops. For this reason, many of the crops contain multiple variations of the BT toxin in their product. In addition, all farms growing GM BT crops must grow a small percentage of normal crops in the vicinity. So the idea is that the normal crops that are not sprayed with any insecticide or anything, all the pests will confer on those crops, eat them up, reproduce wildly, and if there's any mutant that comes out of the non-GM crop, it'll be overwhelmed.
Is that a universal requirement? All farmers have to do this?
Yes. It is for that particular gene. That was when it first came out.
But that's not for all farms.
No, that's just for the BT, the ones that contain the insecticide in the leaves. That's the only one it's for. Okay, the second concern is that weeds would become tolerant to the pesticides that are used in growing the GM crops. Although herbicide resistance has been described, it has not presented a major problem so far. And in the newer GM crops, the scientists have made the crops resistant to multiple herbicides, which reduce the likelihood of getting multiple resistances at once. A third concern is whether the eating of the pests feeding on the GM's crops might pose a threat to predators. In other words, some predator eats a bug that's been eating a GM crop and maybe it'll get sick or die or whatever. So this is a question And studies have shown that there are virtually no impacts on the predator species that feed on those kinds of pests. A fourth question is whether GM traits, in other words, the transgene, could get transferred from a wild, from a GM crop into a wild-related non-GM species. For example, there are wild relatives of brassica, which includes the GM canola, and also beta species, which include the sugar beets. And you know, scientists have shown that pollen from the commercial crops can actually fertilize some of these other species in the lab, although this has never been demonstrated in nature. So far, you know, none of these traits have been transferred into wild species. Okay, the main benefit of GMO crops is economics, of course. And the economics of GM crops was analyzed in a study of 196 publications containing 721 entries for the statistical analysis in the year 2011. The meta-analysis found that crop yields for GM BT cotton were up to 50% higher than conventional cotton in India. However, yields in developed countries were only 1 to 28% higher, since pest management is already aggressive before the introduction of GM cotton. However, reductions in pesticide costs range from 16% in the U.S. to about 70% in China. Yield levels of BT corn are about 5 to 25% higher than conventional corn, along with lower pesticide costs, which result in gross margin increases of 10 to 17% for farmers. For GM soybeans, marginally increased yields and reduced pesticide costs did not make up for the higher cost of the GM seed, so that was sort of a wash. So in general, the benefits of GM farming are much higher in developing countries compared to industrialized countries. And overall, it's estimated that GM crops benefit the national economy of farmers by about $7 billion per year.
Which is worldwide?
That's worldwide, yes. Okay, so now we're going to look at GMOs and how they might be impacting on Christianity. And first we're going to look at the Bible. And of course, in the Bible, there are no dietary restrictions for Christianity other than an admonition against gluttony and eating of food sacrificed to idols, which these do not qualify. An example would be Colossians 2:16, which says, "Therefore, no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink." Okay, so we basically, Christianity, we're not concerned about whether we should eat GMOs or not. Judaism does have a strict dietary code, but Orthodox rabbis have ruled that genetic modification of food is irrelevant to Jewish dietary laws. So obviously there are no prohibitions against eating GMOs by Christians or Jews. Are we playing God? Some Christians say that by creating GMOs, scientists are playing God, because we're creating these new organisms that haven't existed before. However, human beings have been breeding plants for thousands of years, and we're going to look at a couple examples that may surprise you just a little bit. Okay, so here is our familiar corn plant. You know, it has a nice stalk, and it's got some really nice ears with lots of kernels on it. Okay, this plant actually came from a wild plant called teosinte. And teosinte produces an ear which contains, you know, maybe 8 kernels on it. Okay, so actually the Native Americans, they invented this corn just by breeding it. Amazing, huh? Okay, and these are drawings of yellow and red carrots done in a Flemish botanical book from 1554. These carrots came from wild carrots, which are shown on the right. And since this time, carrots have been bred to be orange and sweet, vastly different from the original variety. So these examples show that the crops we grow now are actually quite different from the crops God originally created. So in essence, we have been playing God the entire time. Okay. Besides providing financial benefit, GMOs can provide tangible help to people of third world countries. Vitamin A deficiency kills about 670,000 children under the age of 5 each year. So scientists genetically engineered into rice the beta-carotene gene, which is a precursor of vitamin A. So an average serving of this rice supplies more than half the daily vitamin A requirement. Since a large percentage of the world's children primarily eat rice, this is a good way for them to get extra vitamin A and prevent childhood deaths. Now, what do the environmentalists say? Greenpeace and several other environmental organizations have strongly opposed the introduction of any kind of GMOs, even those that might help third world populations. In this article, Greenpeace co-founder Patrick Moore said Greenpeace should be charged with crimes against humanity for opposing the introduction of golden rice, which could save hundreds of thousands of children from blindness and death each year. Hawaiian papaya was wiped out of the island of Oahu in the early 1950s by the papaya ring spot virus, PRSV. So production was moved to the Big Island. However, PRSV infection on the Big Island began in the 1970s and by the early 1990s had destroyed most of the crops. So in 1996, scientists genetically engineered a gene that produces a defective viral coat protein and put that gene into the papaya plant. When PRSV infects the genetically engineered plant, RNA from the defective coat protein silences the expression of the real coat protein, preventing replication of the virus. However, actually scientists didn't discover that until many years later because we didn't even know that RNA silenced genes at that time. But they made a good guess. So the $60,000 project actually saved the multi-million dollar Hawaiian papaya industry. That's money well spent. Worldwide, there are about 300,000 deaths from pesticide poisoning each year. Even in California, there are about 1,200 poisonings a year, although most of those are not necessarily fatal. Since pest-resistant GMOs can be grown in the absence of pesticides, these deaths and injuries can be eliminated through the culture of GMO crops. Likewise, GMOs allow farmers to use less toxic herbicides to control weeds. The result is lowered environmental impact by agriculture. Food sustainability. The population of the world is expected to rise from the current 7 billion to about 9 billion by 2050. This will require an increase in global crop production by nearly 50%. Since most of the arable land is already dedicated to agriculture, gains in production will require significant increases in productivity. In third world countries where most population increases, agricultural production is significantly impacted by pests, disease, and weeds. So GMOs can dramatically improve productivity under these conditions. Future GMOs. So, right now we have some crops that are resistant to pests and can be produced with to get rid of weeds and stuff. But there are lots of other things that can be done that can do actually amazing things to future crops. Now, plants cannot use nitrogen directly from the air, even though you know they get the oxygen from the air, but they can't use the nitrogen. Nitrogen has to be in a chemical form that can be absorbed by the roots. Only certain classes of bacteria can fix nitrogen from the air. And these bacteria live in symbiosis with certain plants, like the legumes, such as peas and beans. However, through genetic engineering, it's possible to insert the genes from nitrogen-fixing bacteria directly into the plants, which would allow them to produce their own nitrogen. These crops would require little or no fertilizer, reducing their carbon footprint and the environmental impact of runoff from farms. In many parts of the world, climate change has resulted in reduced rainfall, such as in northern and eastern Africa. So drought-resistant crops would markedly increase crop yields in these regions, contributing to global food sustainability. There are also a number of areas where plant diseases impact crop yields, and GMOs engineered to resist these diseases would also contribute to increased food stability. Now we're getting to the interesting part. GMO and politics. Oh, this is so much fun. So most of the opponents of GMOs are the same organizations that are environmental advocates or part of the nutritional health community. Since environmentalists tend to be on the left side of the political spectrum, Keith Clore of Slate wrote this article in the fall of last year saying that GMO opponents are the climate skeptics of the left, implying that they are ignoring the data and acting irrationally. It's quite an admission, actually. Okay, GMO labeling. Now, you know we had this election last year, and we voted it down, but there are actually a number of countries throughout the world that require labeling of GMO components. So these are the countries throughout the world, and actually most of these countries are in the European Union, which dictates the laws of all of those countries. And so this shows the countries in the European Union that require GMO labeling. Now, in countries where GMO labeling is required, GMO products have all but disappeared from the store shelves. The reason for that is not because of the consumers, but because of the stores. The stores have decided that if there's a possibility that somebody will not buy a product because it's labeled GMO, they will not stock it. Okay, so even though, you know, the surveys have shown that the consumers don't look at the labels, the stores won't carry it.
Is this a legal fear?
No, it's not a legal fear. It's an economic fear.
No, I mean from getting sued.
No, it's not from getting sued. It's just, you know, here you have this product, you know, you have your GMO product here, and it says on it, genetically modified. Okay? Some people are not going to buy this simply because it says that, because they're climate skeptics of the left. Okay. GMOs and the law. Okay, so we have a few minutes, and we're doing really well here. Okay, all genetically modified organisms contain patented DNA technology, and the licensing terms require that users of the patent, such as farmers, not save any seed from harvest, but buy licensed seed each year it is planted. Without such a licensing restriction, patents on genetically modified seeds would be useless and to protect companies' investment in creating the patent. However, recently, some GM companies have designed seeds that produce seeds with non-viable embryos. In other words, the embryo part of the seed, which grows into the plant, is non-viable. So they've coated it specially so that it won't grow. And this, of course, prevents farmers from replanting. But essentially, those products are few and far between because it's just started to come out. But there are some interesting cases of patent infringement that have resulted from farmers planting unlicensed GM seed. The most famous case, and some of you may have heard this, involved Percy Schmeiser, a canola farmer from Saskatchewan, Canada. The case inspired an extremely biased documentary called David versus Monsanto. So we're going to look at some excerpts here.
In 1996, the chemical giant Monsanto introduced its brand of canola into Canada, a brand resistant to the pesticide Roundup. In Schweitzer's region, three farmers agreed to plant Monsanto's new GMO canola. Due to a heavy storm during the harvest, freshly cut GMO canola drifted into Percy Schmeiser's field. His work of 50 years of breeding was destroyed because his harvest was contaminated by Monsanto's seed. Contamination and destruction of his own breed was irrevocably damaging to Percy Schmeiser. But on top of that, Monsanto turned him, the victim, into a culprit. August 1998, Schmeiser was sued by Monsanto for having illegally planted the corporation's patented GMO canola.
And what the trial judge ruled, the first trial judge ruled, is what made the case become internationally known overnight, what can happen with farmers when you introduce GMOs. And the judge ruled this. Number one, it does not matter how a farmer is contaminated.
Okay, so this sounds really bad, right? I saw this documentary like 5 or 6 years ago, and I thought at the time, Monsanto is evil, and the Canadian courts must be insane. But the truth is, the facts are not quite the same as was presented in the David versus Monsanto video. Percy Schmeiser was found guilty of patent infringement by three courts, including the Canadian Supreme Court. According to Schmeiser's account, in 1997, he sprayed the herbicide Roundup around some telephone poles in his property at the edge of his farm and discovered that some canola plants survived, indicating that they were obviously genetically modified. So he says that he sprayed an additional 4 acres of the adjacent field and found that 60% of those plants survived the spraying. Does anybody believe that? Do you believe that you could just, you know, have a piece of land where 60% of your crop blew in from your neighbors? I don't think so. Okay, but he wasn't actually sued for that. It gets much more interesting. The documentary suggested that the 60% came from windflown contamination. However, at harvest, Schmeiser saved the seed that he harvested from that he knew was resistant separately. And the following year, he intentionally planted it. another additional 1,000 acres out of his total of 1,400. So it wasn't like it accidentally got contaminated and it went into this field. No, he took 1,000 acres of his land and planted intentionally with this GM seed that he knew was GMO. Okay, but fortunately for Schmeiser, he didn't actually use the herbicide Roundup. If he had, he would have been in deep trouble because he would have actually infringed the patent. So the Canadian Supreme Court actually said that he had infringed the patent, but because he didn't use the herbicide Roundup, they were getting rid of the financial judgments, which would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars in court costs. So that's the story, and obviously Schmeiser's account of accidental contamination is probably not true. Okay, there's an even better story. You're going to like this one. So Monsanto's technology agreement allows farmers to sell their genetically modified crops to commodity markets. In a commodity market, basically, you know, you sell it, and the seed is used generally for feeding livestock and stuff. So you can use it for anything but planting. But there's this guy named Vernon Bowman who, after planting his Roundup Ready soybean seed from Monsanto, decided to obtain a second season crop from the commodity market. So he bought those seeds, saving money on seed costs and avoiding the licensing fees. Since 94% of the soybean market in the U.S. uses Roundup Ready seeds, then the seed from the commodity market was probably, you know, nearly pure GM seed. So Bowman planted the seed from the commodity market, and he harvested the seed and saved it for next year's planting. Then, amazingly, he wrote Monsanto saying exactly what he had done. So, needless to say, Monsanto sued him. What was he thinking? So, Monsanto alleged that Bowman, in planting the seed from the commodity market, had violated the terms of the license agreement, and the judge agreed with Monsanto, along with an appeals court, the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, and the case is currently before the U.S. Supreme Court. And people have been speculating that maybe the Supreme Court is going to give a different ruling, but if they do, then essentially it will wipe out genetically modified seed, unless they make the seed so that it can't be replanted. So we're going to look at this is our friend again, another video from our friend on a different topic.
In 2001, a small California biotech company called Epicyte patented a product, patented a gene, which causes both men and women who eat it, in the form of any product, to produce antibodies to sperm. If the men eat the Epicyte gene, they produce antibodies to their own sperm, rendering them irreversibly sterile. If women eat the Epicyte gene, when they have intercourse, their bodies produce antibodies to the sperm that has been deposited, and they become infertile through the destruction of the sperm. Now, DuPont and Monsanto formed a joint venture, purchased the Epicyte firm, and, quote, commercialize the Epicyte gene. Do you want to know if the food that you're eating contains the Epicyte gene?
Okay, don't eat that corn. Okay, well, the story is immediately suspect, but actually, if you look up for Epicyte on the internet, you just type in Epicyte, you will find this story all over the internet. It's everywhere, and it's not really refuted anywhere, actually. But it's immediately suspect because you won't expect Monsanto and DuPont to collaborate on anything since they're competitors. The reality is that Epicyte developed five patents between 1997 and 2000 related to the ability to produce monoclonal antibodies in plants. None of these patents involved antibodies to sperm, first of all, and neither Monsanto nor DuPont ever purchased Epicyte. In fact, Epicyte was purchased by BioLex Therapeutics in 2004. BioLex attempted to produce monoclonal antibodies in the aquatic plant duckweed, not corn, but they sold their antibody system to Synthon in April 2012 and went bankrupt in July of 2012. So this is a huge hoax. But you will find articles like this all over the internet. There's a lot of negative information about genetically modified organisms. Yes? Farm salmon tend to be grown in farms, usually off the coast. So, you know, they'll have pens and they just grow it in there. It's salmon that's contained. I mean,
they're all on salmon. I think it tastes terrible wild salmon.
It's part of the nutritional. You know, everything has to be natural. Okay, but
there's nothing wrong.
There's nothing different about it. Okay. Yes.
Well, Roundup. If I spray Roundup near my vegetable garden. Would that hurt the vegetables?
Yes. Yes. Unless you're growing GMOs. If you find, but you can't actually, as a gardener, you cannot buy GMOs. You have to be a farmer and you have to buy, you know, your umpteen zillion pounds of seed. Ross?
Is changing something genetically alter its nutritional value at all?
No, the nutritional value is exactly the same. As a matter of fact, there was an article in a science journal probably about a year ago that compared organic versus non-organic produce, and the nutritional value was identical. So you know, GMOs, natural, yes.
Just playing devil's advocate for a moment at a very high level. Often, humanity produces certain medicines that we have seen over the past 20 years that it was great, and then suddenly they have to pull it. Then this one's great, we have to pull it. This one's safe, then they have to pull it. In other words, they're fooling around with an incredibly complex tinker toy set that they may not have full knowledge of what they're doing. So couldn't that sometimes apply in this realm, that we may not know what the long-term ramifications may be? You know, antibiotic resistance, I don't know, may be tied to some of this. We're growing more and more resistant to antibiotics because we're using it so much, doctors use it so much for treatment of patients. And if you put antibiotics in food, that would help produce maybe more antibiotic resistance. And now there's some bacteria out there that aren't killed by any antibiotics. So how would you respond to that?
Well, you know, antibiotic resistance is a problem, and it's not put in the food, at least not intentionally, because that would be very bad. But these genes that are being incorporated are very specific. They're not like random genes. You know, they're a gene that produces Bacillus thuringiensis toxin. You know, it produces a toxin. That's all the gene does. It doesn't do anything else. And the toxin is only toxic to caterpillars. So if you're not a caterpillar, you'll be fine. So we are out of time. So
just one question as a summary thing. Is it a good assumption that the reason for the great deal of opposition to the labeling on the part of Monsanto, et cetera, because of the fear of the same thing that they saw in Europe, that having labeling will cause those products not to be purchased, and therefore they lose money?
Yes, that is the reason, because that would happen here. So, Lord, we thank you for all the food that you provided us, and we thank you for helping us to be a light to the world, and we thank you for helping us to maybe contribute to the growing need for food sustainability in third world countries. And you ask us to to be a light to others and to help them in their needs. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.